ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Continuing page 14 in Bhagavad Gita as this introduction. Vedic knowledge is not imparted by such defective living entities. It was imparted under the heart of Brahma, the first created living being, and Brahma, in his turn, disseminated this knowledge to his sons and disciples, as he originally received it from the Lord. The Lord is Purnam, all perfect, and there is no possibility of his becoming subjected to the laws of material nature. One should therefore be intelligent enough to know that the Lord is the only proprietor of everything in the universe, and that he is the original creator, the creator of Brahma. In the 11th chapter, the Lord is addressed as Prapitamaha, because Brahma is addressed as Pitamaha, the grandfather, and he is the creator of the grandfather. So no one should claim to be the proprietor of anything. One should accept only things which are set aside for him by the Lord as his quota for his maintenance. Here then two parts are being made, is that this Vedic knowledge is perfect, and so therefore cannot be spoken by someone who is imperfect. So the Lord here is perfect. Therefore he is the right, as the Lord, he is the right person to speak the Vedic knowledge. Therefore the Vedic knowledge contains no mistakes. One should have no doubts about it. And the other is then that the Lord himself, he is the first knowledge, all knowledge. Everyone accepts that the knowledge is coming from Brahma. Brahma spoke to Vedas. So now Krishna spoke to Brahma. He is the one who instructed him. So he is before him, therefore making his speech the most important. Because otherwise someone may say, okay, Veda is good, but then the Gita, then this is not so important. Because Veda is Shruti, that which is heard. But the Gita then falls into what's called Smriti, that which has been written. So the Vedas are Apurusheya, they're always eternal, they're always present. It means they're never, how do you say, manifested like that through any particular person. They are spoken to Brahma, and then Brahma, then he gives them to others. But generally these other literatures, then they are coming from other great personalities, sages, and other such persons. And they are written, they are called Smriti. So some people may argue that Gita is not so important. So here, because Krishna, he spoke the Veda to Brahma, and everybody accepts Veda. So then naturally, then one should accept the knowledge that is given by Krishna himself directly to Arjuna. If we accept the knowledge given directly by the Lord to Brahma, we should also accept which is given by Krishna to Arjuna. It will be the same. So it's actually technically Shruti, like that, because it's not coming from some sages written it down. This is come because, and by their realization of the Veda. No, this is coming directly. So that point is here. And then third point is then Krishna, he's the proprietor of everything, because as we discussed before, the soul has an inherent problem in the material world. That of thinking, I am the controller and I am the enjoyer. So control means you create, you know, and what you create you'll enjoy, you control it. You know, I am the person, you know, this I and mine. These two are the main essential. The living entity thinks he's God. And so these are the two problems when he thinks he's God, is I and mine. So I turns into this path of jnana, you know, all this knowledge, I am soul, I am, you know, I am everything, I am God, I am this, that. And the mind becomes I am the enjoyer, so this gives rise to the karma kanda. So both of these problems are problems, serious problems of the living entity in the material world, and they infect, you know, pretty much everything that he does. You know, there's some aspect of this impersonal or enjoying spirit. So then this point also is again being made here, is that because he's the original, he's the one, he's the creator, he created Brahma, therefore no one here who's been then created by Brahma, all the bodies, everything we see have been created by Brahma, by his arrangement, then we cannot claim to be the controller and enjoyer. So again, this point is being made. A different angle. This is still making the point we're not the body, and we're a servant of God. But it's a different way of presenting it. So many times we say, oh, I've heard that so many times. But here's a different way it's presented. When it says, I am mine, then we think, yes, the gross materialist, he thinks I am a big person, and he's greedy about everything. That point is simply saying, we're not this body, we are servant of Krishna. Right? I am not the controller, I am not the enjoyer, I am the servant. Right? If I'm the controller, then I am not the servant. And if I'm the enjoyer, I'm also not the servant. Right? Servant doesn't control and enjoy. The Lord does. So this is many, many ways Prabhupada's saying it. So we have to catch these points. But these all give different subtle aspects based on the consciousness, based on the intelligence, based on the mind. So many ways that it's explaining the same point, because this is the point we missed. We may say, I've heard it, but because we've heard it, if we actually understood it, then our material consciousness would be gone. We'd be liberated. It would be that simple. Because we still think we're the controller and enjoyer, even if small. Okay, I'm not the controller of the whole world, you know, but at least I'm the controller of this corner of the room where I keep my little bag and I keep my mat, and no one else should come here and sleep here. This is, I'm the controller of this spot. So whatever it is, or we give up that, we go to the forest, I'm the controller of the body. Yes, I walk around, you know, with nothing, and I eat fruits and that, because that's the way I want it to be, you know. I'm in control here, so I eat fruits and that, and I don't wear any clothes, and I live in the forest. Right? So, but still, we're the controller and the enjoyer. So that's the contamination. So even the great sadhus and saintly persons and that, if they're not devotees, then they are infected with this. And devotees, because of their condition, this is there, but it's going. You know, the example of someone in the shower, they're taking a bath. So you may criticize, yes, you're dirty, look at your back and your legs are dirty, but they're in the shower taking a bath, so why criticize? They're in the process. It's going on. You give them a few minutes and they'll finish. But this has to be made again and again from many different angles, because these are the only points. There are no more points in the whole Vedic literature than these few points. God is the Supreme Lord and Controller. We're the servant, and our duty is to serve Him. And our natural inclination is to develop pure love for Him. And that process of expressing that love is through devotional service. There is not one more topic in the whole Vedic literature. That's it. There isn't anything else. But, having heard that, if we haven't digested that and surrendered this moment to Krishna, then more explanation is there. And therefore then we see the Vedic literatures are like an ocean. But they're only explaining this. They're explaining different ways how Krishna is the supreme, how he's the controller, how he's the enjoyer, the nature of the soul, what is Brahman, relationship is there, the material world, what it is, relationship, the process of devotional service. Right? Rupa Goswami writes Nectar of Devotion. Then the Acharyas take one verse, and that verse they write a whole book. Or Rupa Goswami wrote the Upadeshamrita, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur takes three verses only. The first three, writes a whole book. Right? So like this, the Acharyas just take one point and then they can write a whole book, just expanding the one point. So like this, Ananta with unlimited hoods, he's speaking unlimitedly on these same points. So if that becomes clear, then we can focus what is devotional service. and we can become serious. Because having learned the knowledge, that's not the how you say, the endeavor to learn the knowledge, that is devotional service. Having the knowledge, that's not devotional service. Right? We have to be clear on this. Just that you have it, right? The desire to dress as a devotee, act as a devotee, but just because we have a dhoti or a chadar or a sari, that doesn't mean it is devotional service. It's a mood in which it's done. Just like cooking, everybody's cooking. But whether you cook to please Krishna or don't, you just cook for it, then it makes a difference. So all these things are simply to get us to understand what is devotional service. Example is given that you want to point out the moon. Somebody doesn't know what the moon is. So you say, oh, you see in the distance that tree, right? Because people know what a tree is. And then you go up the tree, up to the top of the tree, okay. And then you see off to the left, there's one branch going, yes? And then you see just above that, there's this round white circle. That's the moon. So the tree's not the moon. Your arm pointing is not the moon. Your voice is not the moon. The moon's something else. So all these things are simply so that we understand what is devotional service. So therefore, if they touch Krishna, then they become devotional service. They don't touch Krishna, they're not devotional service. Sometimes we may get so much knowledge, material, either Vedic, non-Vedic, we gain this knowledge, and then we think we're very advanced, right? We're devotees, yes, I know so much astrology, or I know Ayurveda, or I know, you know, so many branches are there of Vedic knowledge, Sanskrit, this, that. But that has nothing to do with devotional service. It's material. Except for Bhagavat, everything else in the Vedic literature is mundane. Just mundane. But it's Krishna's definition of the mundane. That's why it's superior than speculative knowledge of material world. So, if this knowledge, Krishna's mundane Vedic knowledge, is used in Krishna's service for pleasing Krishna, then it becomes called what's called apara vidya. Para means transcendental. Apara means not transcendental, mundane. It gets elevated to that platform. It's not spiritual, but it's dovetailed material. Then it's considered good, because then it helps you get out of the material world. Right? But the same knowledge, if it's not used to please Krishna or connected to Krishna, it's called avidya or ignorance. Right? It's called ignorance. And that same knowledge will take you to hell. Same knowledge. Doesn't matter if it's Vedic or not. If it's not used to please Krishna, it's not spiritual. Sometimes we think, just because it's the external, we know the ritual, we know the mantra, we know the dress, we know the walk, we know the talk, so therefore we're advanced devotees. No, that is simply your arm, the tree, and all that. That is simply to get it that you understand your Krishna. The dhoti is not spiritual. But because Krishna wears a dhoti, and therefore the devotees, then they like to do things like Krishna likes, follow his culture. So that endeavor, that is spiritual. Dhoti is still made out of material energy. But if it touches Krishna, it becomes electrified. It becomes purified by the chit potency. Then it becomes beneficial. That same cloth will purify you. But if not, it will degrade. It will degrade. So this is the you know, meaning when we say we just chant Hare Krishna, we don't care for the rest, because we connect everything to Krishna. That's the essential. Whatever we use, the rest of it we care for if it's connected to Krishna. It's not connected, what's the use? So we have to be very, very careful in this. This is the meaning Rupa Goswami gives, Niyamagraha. Is that if you take the rule without connecting it to Krishna, it's nice, it's pious, It's a million times better than someone who speculates and follows Western knowledge or culture. Because it's Krishna's nonsense. But it's still material. And it's still useless. It will elevate you in the material world. And generally, Krishna says pious people surrender to him. They don't say impious. So it's better to be pious than impious. Right? In Gita, Krishna says, first you surrender. If you can't follow sadhana bhakti, you can't work for me, you can't do that, then you give the result. If you can't do that, just be a nice, pious guy. And if you can't do that, then be a Mayavadi. Then be an impersonalist. Those are the order of preference. So it's better than nothing. But it's still useless. Even one is Brahma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I'd rather be a bug in the house of a Vaishnava than a Brahma who's not a devotee. It's useless. So much piety. It's such a waste. Such a waste. So this is a very fine point, is that these things we use, so we're enthusiastic to use it, because Krishna said, this is there. Prabhupada's always talking about Veda culture. Right? Because it's superior culture. It's Krishna's culture. Krishna follows it. But Krishna is doing it to please himself. Therefore, it's perfect. Right? Pleasing Krishna is perfection. So Krishna follows it to please himself. So it's perfect. And the devotees follow it to please Krishna. So it's perfect. So if one follows it without connecting it to Krishna, it's nice, but useless. And at the same time, the other, rejecting it because one doesn't understand it, it doesn't fit into you how you like to do things, or you didn't grow up like that, or your mommy didn't teach you like that, then that's also useless. But of the two, it's the inferior. Because then that means the first one, at least they have faith, though blind faith and not very well directed faith in the Vedic literature. Vedas say, do this, I do it. Even though it's dogmatic and without knowledge and that. But at least there's some glimmer of faith in the Veda. And the other one means there's no faith, that's faithless. You don't understand it, and because we're the most important central figure in the cosmic creation, since I don't understand it, it's useless. It doesn't apply now. We chant Hare Krishna, we don't care for all these things, right? But that's fine. As long as that person who said that only chants Hare Krishna, I don't mind. Anyone who says, we only chant Hare Krishna, and all they do is chant Hare Krishna and preach, and that's all. They make no endeavor for any food, economic development, clothing, place to stay, anything. Like the Goswamis, yes, I accept that 100%. But if they're making some endeavor for those, then how are those things being engaged in the Lord's service? That means anything other than chanting Hare Krishna in that person's life is just Maya. Because all they do is chant Hare Krishna and we don't care for anything else, means when I chant, that's connected to Krishna. When I do anything else, that's mine. So it's I and mine. Same, come back right to the same point. We're not the servant. We don't believe in that. Means theoretically, yes. But, you know, I'm a senior devotee. I've been here 30 years. I should be in charge. Why this new person is there? I'm Prabhupada's disciple. I'm this, I'm that, I'm so many things. So that means still that tinge is there. So we have to be very, very careful. So that's why this point is made over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. Because without it, then one, it's the basis of everything. You know? Just like if you have something that is contaminated and you want to wash it, but the thing that's making it contaminated, you keep it in touch with, it'll never get clean. So if our consciousness is contaminated, it doesn't matter how much we purify the body, the mind, the intelligence, you know, even the ego. Okay, I'm not this body, but, you know, I'm somebody, you know, like that. I'm an advanced devotee, I'm big, you know, this, that, I'm something. Right? It may be a semi-spiritualized ego, but that ego, it's not good enough. One may say, no, what's wrong with it? Then if something's not wrong with it, why did Krishna leave the rasa dance? The gopis are on the transcendental platform. They are in transcendental bodies. They are with Krishna. They are the most fortunate girls in the cosmic creation. It's all fact, 100%. But because they're proud of it, then Krishna doesn't want to be with them. Right? Because he's God. Everything came from him. Right? He's everything. I mean, there's nothing going on without him. But is he proud? No. So you want to be with God, then you have to be great, but not proud. So this kind of ego won't fly. It doesn't work. So even you have all that, you purified all this, but if the consciousness is still contaminated with the idea that I am the controller and I am the enjoyer, all of our endeavors to purify the other lower levels will be fruitless. Right? That's why there's four aspects of the ego. Right? You have Sankarshan, Prajumnadi, Uddha, Vasudev. You know, all four have to be purified. So Vasudev is the consciousness. If that's not purified to I am the servant, then that's the basis of the other three. Right? We're in Vasudev Sattva first. When Krishna creates, when the material universes are there and he glances on them and injects the pradhan with the living entities, you know, and the time and the ego. So that ego is I am the enjoyer, I am the controller. Then it turns to Mahatattva, it becomes alive. And then from there, then everything starts. But that, at that point, it's Brahman. So everybody's on the Brahman platform. So they're on Brahman platform. They don't have any bodies. They're not performing any activities. They're just in Brahman. And they're awake. They're not like when they're in Mahavishnu. They're asleep. That's the Shunyavad. Right? Everything's void. So they experience that. When they come out, then that's Nirvishesh. There's no qualities, nothing. But in the heart, there's the desire to enjoy. Desire to control. Then, the next manifestation, then you get Sankarshan, then Prajumna, then Aniruddha, and that creates the mind, the intelligence, the senses, the body, all these identities. So all these different kinds of ego then are manifest. But they're all based on that. And that's coming all from very high level. That's why the impersonalist can't get beyond the spirit, the Brahman. Because even though they've given up material identity, they haven't accepted spiritual identity. True. Means that they are servant of God. They understand they're Brahman. But they think that they're God Brahman. Rather than servant Brahman. That's why they can't get into the spiritual world. So this is a very important point. So even though we may feel it's a very basic point, you know, we've heard it a million times. That's why you've heard it a million times. It's the most important point. You have that point, right? Something most important is said again and again and again and again. Sometimes we're thinking, you know, okay, Prabhupada's taught us ABC so many times I can write, you know, I'm a Nobel laureate in literature and got the, you know, whatever it is, you know, why keep saying ABC? No, because we're not. You know this, you're not here. If we find we're still conditioned, means this point's not understood. If we find we're liberated, means we almost understood it. We half understood it. And if we find that we have prema, then we understood it. Like that. So that's the point. When do we need to not hear this anymore? When we develop pure unalloyed love. And then those on that platform, then they think they don't have. They think they're useless. So they don't mind hearing it over and over again. But then you like hearing it because then, you know, it reminds you of Krishna. And here we don't because it, you know, makes us... We want to feel that I'm progressing, I'm advancing, I'm becoming the big person, right? This idea of dasanu, dasanu, das, okay, that's when I joined. But after a few years, then it should be dasanu, dasanu, das. And after then dasanu, das, and pretty soon das, and then God, right? So that's the... That's the idea. We'll just progress up through this, right? You have to progress. Huh? Yeah, you move up the ladder, right? You got to get to the top. So, but it doesn't, it's as you progress, you find you're more and more back. And that gives then yourself more happiness and gives Krishna more happiness. Right? That is the point. Right? The son gives the mother great happiness, but there's more happiness from the grandchild, even more from the great-grandchild. So if we remember that, then we understand this principle. Like that. Happiness is not at the front. Happiness is in the back. Like that. That's on this transcendental platform. Material platform, of course, the other way around is more ideal. But on the spiritual platform, it's the other way. Like that. Then continue. There are many examples given of how we are to utilize those things which are set aside for us by the Lord. This is also explained in Bhagavad Gita. In the beginning, Arjuna decided that he should not fight in the battle of Kurukshetra. This was his own decision. Arjuna told the Lord that it was not possible for him to enjoy the kingdom after killing his own kinsmen. This decision was based on the body, because he was thinking that the body was himself, and that his bodily relations and expansions were his brothers, nephews, brothers-in-laws, grandfathers, and so on. He was thinking in this way to satisfy his bodily demands. Bhagavad Gita was spoken by the Lord just to change this view, and at the end, Arjuna decides to fight under the directions of the Lord when he says, Karishye vachanam tava. I shall act according to thy word. So this is Yukta Vairagya. This is the very most essential point here, is that Arjuna was going to fight, but he was fighting because he's in charge, he's in control, right? And then the result of that, he's going to enjoy, right? So he's going to fight, he's going to control, so he's going to win, right? And he will enjoy with everybody, all his nice relatives and that. Because in this battle, right, you have, 11 and 7, 18 Aukshahinis of warriors on the battlefield. But in Arjuna's mind, all that's going to be killed is Duryodhana, his brothers, Karna, Shakuni, and a few, nasty elements around the edges, who he doesn't know, who are just kings and other and their people who have come in support of Duryodhana. That's all. And then after he wins this battle, then he, along with, Drona and Bhishma and all his relatives and Shalya, they're going to enjoy the kingdom. Right? That's his idea. Then when he gets out, he realizes who's there. It's only relatives. All the big people are known. Kshatriyas are the royal family. There's only so many of them. Right? Like that. So, therefore, he knows everybody. And due to, the system, they're all intermarried, interrelated. Therefore, all that's out there is relatives. And it's not that they're all on his side and on the other side is all the baddies. That happens in Hollywood, but real life is something else. So therefore, he found it was on both sides. So then he's not in control, right? That's the first problem. And then he understands, therefore, since he's not in control, he's not going to enjoy it. Then, naturally, then we start quoting all kinds of nice dharma, why we should do this, we should be tolerant, so many nice, nice religious principles. But these religious principles were still so he can be in control, right? We won't fight, I'm in control of this, right? And we'll maintain all the traditions and we will enjoy. Same principle. And then Krishna says, no, you're a fool. Right? And he says, there's the soul, there's the spiritual path, there's all these things. And then Arjuna goes, yes, you've opened my eyes. Now I was all absorbed in all this dharma and kshatriya and fighting and anger and all these things, and you've shown me something higher. So now, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to practice this higher transcendental path that you've shown me? And Krishna says, go out on the battlefield and fight. So then he becomes totally bewildered.
Wait a minute. I just said about all this nice dharma and kshatriyas and this and that, and you told me I was a fool. Now you're telling me the same thing. So what's the problem? How is this? So the point is that when all these things, dharma, and all these activities of, you know, sadhana and Vedic culture and all this, if they're not connected to the Lord, then they are. They're mundane. They're useless. But if they're connected to the Lord, then there are means of purification. Arjuna, by fighting for himself, will just stay here. He'll either win and they'll be kings, or he'll go to the heavenly planets. That's all. Nothing more. But if he fights for Krishna, to please Krishna, same thing, nothing different. He goes back to Godhead. So that's the key to this. This is the meaning of Yukta Vairagya. Yukta Vairagya doesn't mean however I think, I just use anything I like and just say, yes, it's for Krishna. No, it means Krishna has given the process. You can take anything and plug it into Krishna's process, not into our process. Right? Arjuna was giving his own idea how to apply. No, but Krishna, there's a way to apply Krishna's process. The Vedic knowledge is to be connected to devotional service. The non-devotees have taken this knowledge and are using it for their own purposes. They're thieves. It's Krishna's knowledge. Right? Saraswati doesn't belong to them. Veda doesn't belong to them. It's Krishna's knowledge. He spoke it to Brahma. So there's a process. It has to be used properly. Right? So there's nothing wrong with the Vedic knowledge. It's how you use it. Right? You'll never see Prabhupada say anything bad about Vedic knowledge. He says bad about how people use it. The consciousness of the people using it. The goals that they set using the Vedic knowledge. Right? That he speaks on. But he never says anything bad about the Vedic knowledge. So if it's used in connection with Krishna, how Krishna directs it to be used, not by your own speculation, then it becomes perfect. Then it becomes useful. Like that. So, therefore he's fighting under the direction of the Lord. Yeah, I shall act according to thy word. Right? I was going to act according to mine. I know the dharma. How you shoot the arrow, who you can shoot it at, when you can shoot it, that's already written. But he was going to do that for his own happiness, thinking, I am the doer. But now he's accepted that, no, Krishna is the doer. I am the instrument. And I do it according to the same rules, because they're Krishna's rules, but now to please Krishna. Then it becomes good. Then one is purified. So this is the meaning of we chant Hare Krishna, we don't care for anything else. Because that is the perfection. We chant, we connect everything to Krishna. The rule itself has no value for us unless it's connected to Krishna. Therefore, we take those rules and those directions that the spiritual master and the acharyas give us. Because they're setting for us a path. Right? The Vedic knowledge will take you anywhere from hell, right, if it's misused, you know, to earthly planets, to the heavenly planets, in between, you know, to the higher planets, up to Brahma, to Shiva's place, to the Brahman, to Vaikuntha, Dwarka, Ayodhya, Mathura, and Vraja. So if you want to go to Vraja, same path, but you're going to go farther. So if you're going to go farther, they're slightly different. Like if you're just going to go to Delhi today and come back today, you don't need to take anything with you. If you're going to stay overnight, you have to take a little more. If you're going to stay a week, you're going to take more than that. And if you get to Delhi and then you're going to fly to somewhere else, so even though everybody on the path is going to go to Delhi, there's no difference. How we follow the path of liberation, the impersonalists follow, is exactly the same. They also control the senses, you know, and do all these things, non-violence and truthfulness and mercy, all that. It's exactly the same. We have no difference of opinion on how to get to liberation. our difference of opinion is they say that's the goal, and we say that's where it starts. Right? The spiritual life starts in liberation. Right? And factually, if you really want to look at it seriously, even there it doesn't start. It only really starts at prema bhakti. So that's where we have. So that at that point we leave them. Then we keep going. And then getting out of that and getting into the spiritual realm, same as those going to Vaikuntha, you know, then we want to go past that to Dwarka, past that, so we keep going. So because of that, because you have a particular goal, certain rules, details aren't so important. Because if everything's starting from Vrindavan, that means everything's based on Vrindavan. The lifestyle in Mathura, in Dwarka, in Ayodhya, in Vaikuntha, in the heavenly planets and the earthly planet, it's all based on the same principles that are there in Vrindavan, because everything's expanding from there. Since it expanded from there, it's not going to be different. But because the consciousness is different, therefore the detail of application is different. Right? So therefore, the principles will always be the same. The detail, we may accept this one and not that one. But that doesn't make it principle. The principle is what makes it work. Therefore, you'll see differences between one sampradaya and another, or one you know group of you know if they're Shankarites or if they're you know this or that, whatever. Depending on what they want, detail will be different. Principle is always the same. They all have to control their senses, respect authority, work with others, be non-violent. They're exactly the same. There's no different path, because it's Krishna's path. He says one path. It's just how far you go on it. You get off earlier, then you know you get off at the heavenly planets, you're called a Karmakandi. You get off at the Brahman, you're called an impersonalist. You get off at Vaikuntha, then you're a Vaikunthavadi. You get off at Dwarka, then like that. It's his path. Or if you're not even going up, you're going down, yes, that's called impious. But it's still Krishna's path to hell. It's not that you choose the path. It's already chosen for you. It's already worked out. It's not that you get to choose which tree they're going to, you know, pull you down. It's full of thorns. Or which cliff they're going to toss you off. No, I don't like this cliff so much. That one looks a little better, you know. No, it's set. You do this activity, you get that. Very simple. Like that. So it's Krishna's path still. So this point is the essence. Those essential points. We're looking for essence, and then we're seeing how it applies in so many situations. That is the perfection that we see in Prabhupada and the Acharyas, is they can take the essence, and then they can give it to you according to time, place, and circumstance. Sometimes you hear devotees say, oh, Prabhupada says one thing, Jiva says another, Vishwanath another, Baladeva another, or Baladeva has this opinion on Gita and Vishwanath that. This is spoken by, this is not a fully informed opinion. They're saying exactly the same thing. Just depending upon the audience or what point they're trying to make, they say it differently. Right? Just like you want to tell an adult, okay, how to do a simple thing. You know, and the same simple thing that a child could do, you're going to tell the child. You're going to use exactly the same tone of voice, same language, same everything, right? No. You're going to say it differently to the child. So that means then someone else is going, he's giving two completely different instructions to these two different people. You know, how is this? How to work this out? I'm so bewildered. It's exactly the same thing. So there's no contradiction. If there is a contradiction, we have to go deeper. And if we're not finding it, therefore Rupa Goswami says you approach the previous acharyas through your acharya. Then you'll understand. You try to go without the acharya, oh, Prabhupada says this and Jiva says that, that's not allowed. You're not a Rupanuga. Rupa Goswami doesn't allow this. You have to see what Rupa Goswami says, how Prabhupada said it. What Vishwanath, what Baladev, what Narottam, what Krishnadas, if you don't see it through the gate that Prabhupada is giving, you're not a Rupanuga. Say what you like,
stand on your head, do whatever you want, you're not accepted by Rupa Goswami or any of his followers. That's simple. We may think we are, we can think so many things. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said the most amazing thing is how the small thinks he's the greatest. Right? The unlimitedly small soul thinks he is God. Right? And it's just because he thinks. And this whole material creation is going on just because people think they're God. So they're here. So the same way is, we can think we're doing spiritual life, but that doesn't mean it is. The ritual is not the spiritual life. The dress is not the spiritual life. The talk is not the spiritual life. The words are not the spiritual life. Unless they're empowered, it's not spiritual. Right? We have this book here made out of paper. So man, you could go down to the store and buy so many other nonsense novels made out of the same paper, printed at the same printer, using the same dyes, everything. But what's different? Because here it's connected to the parampara. It's spiritualized. Therefore, you touch this book, you read one word of this book, you become elevated. Because it's touched Krishna. Right? So whatever we do, the voice, it's material. It's being heard by material ear, digested by material brain. But because the chit potency is there, it becomes spiritual and you become elevated. So that's the whole, that's why Prabhupada is giving iron and fire. That's the definition of absolute. Iron's in fire, it's fire. Iron's not in fire, it's iron. And it can be put in or taken out. It doesn't have, there's no rule that once it's taken out, it's eternally damned. No, this is a modern concept. Vedic is, you know, soul is eternal. When it's put into the fire, it becomes spiritual. And when it's out of the fire, then it's in mundane consciousness. When it's in the fire, then it's in spiritual consciousness. So that is the very, very, you know, how do you say, simple point, but how do you say, kind of like removed from its sentimental approach, like that. You know, this, we're just talking tattva. We want to talk rasa, that's another thing. This is just talking the tattva of it. Rasa, then it makes it smooth and nice and palatable. But tattva is just to establish reality, so you understand it. And sometimes tattva is not so palatable. Everybody likes rasa. You talk nice this, nice that. You can fill up the room with people. Right? And you start talking this, you find room, so maybe kind of empties out. Because the other is nice. It's enjoyable. And we want to enjoy. But we have to know how to enjoy. What to enjoy. Otherwise, then we're enjoying Krishna. So that's nice. But it's not as nice as we becoming enjoyable by Krishna. That's the thing. The child is sitting on the mother's lap when they're small, you know, and walking overhead. It doesn't mean when they're 30 years old they're doing that. So in the beginning, so many things are there. Krishna is going with us in our heart, looking at so much nonsense we do. Does that mean now as a devotee we do the same nonsense? Oh, he was with us, he didn't say anything. You know, it's like early days, we did so many things, Prabhupada never said anything, you know, it's perfectly fine. No, you're new. So we're doing so much nonsense. And Krishna is seeing, because he likes us, so he goes with us. Waiting. Then when we take up the path, then it starts. Then it gets serious, right? Arjuna, Krishna is there. You take me to the middle of the battlefield. And Krishna is joking. Oh, you want to go and make some new friends in that. You want to go see who's on the other side, who you can get to know, and this and that. And because he's friends, they're equals, so they just joke. But then when he gets bewildered, then he says, okay, I surrender to you. Then it's a different mood. It's a different mood. So that's there. In the beginning, maybe one thing, and then it'll develop.
like that develops. So in the beginning, so many things we may do, but as we go, we have to mature and we have to see what is Prabhupada's move, what is Prabhupada saying, how to approach. Then we can see what is Prabhupada talking about. It's not just basic. So many will want to say, yes, Prabhupada gives the basic thing and I will give the higher thing, or that one's giving the higher thing, or so many are giving the higher thing. What higher thing? Right? Point is applying the technique is one thing. Having knowledge of it is something else. You can have knowledge of so many things, but it doesn't mean you can do it. Right? So many times we're developing things for a curriculum for the school, and you know, we don't know the topic, so we go and we dig up some books on it. You know, you get this PhD, this and that, you know, something, Rati or Shiromani that, and we get the book, we read it, you know, you get some idea, you get some knowledge from that. Then you go to someone who practically does it. Or if you go to some another academic, they say yes, yes, and say the same things. You go to someone who actually does the thing, and then you go, you got all this knowledge from those people who just read books. But actually, it's another way. The person is speaking authoritative, but he doesn't know, because he doesn't know the field. Right? You have somebody, a big musicologist like that, couldn't carry a tune in the bucket. Right? And you go to the musicians, and they say, this is all nonsense. It's not music. That's all their theories. You know, like we hear now, you have all these Indologists, right? Big Indologists. They're the authority on Indian culture, right? You can bring some nice man, gentleman who's been following all his life, for generations they've been following. He can say seven generations of his family. He's not the authority. The big PhD, he's the Indologist. So then says, in the Rig Veda age, you know, in 3000 BC, then was this, and then after then they had the Yajurveda age, and then it turned into the Puranic age, you know. Like this time, and then we had the Vedanta age at the this AD, and then what do they know? It's nonsense. But so like that. So knowledge is one thing, and doing it's another. So just because someone can give you some knowledge of a higher nature doesn't mean that they can tell you how to do it. That's another thing. An expert can teach experts. A master can teach anyone. You will not find an expert teaching a new person. They don't have the tolerance. They don't have the understanding how to do it. They can't. Someone who's a master can say the topmost things in the simplest way to a child. Probably get a child to understand Krishna is the Supreme Lord. That's a master. So that's what's necessary. Therefore, through our own acharya, we approach the previous acharyas. Then we actually see that there's so much that they're saying, but it's said in so many different ways, and as you mature and advance, you will see deeper and deeper meanings of the same thing. Right? Deeper and deeper meanings of the same thing. Therefore, then, one will not accept that others have the higher knowledge and Prabhupada is giving the basics, the fundamentals. No. Prabhupada is going from the top to the bottom, but he's so expert, he says it so that anyone can read it and they'll all get it. The neophyte reads it, he gets what he needs. The Paramahamsa reads it, they get what they need. Right? Like Prithu Maharaj milking the earth. Everybody got exactly what they needed. Same cow. Right? But because the calf is different, then they get something different. Like that. Same cow. So that is the thing. That is very essential. Time is up. So any questions on this? Or? No? Yes, Mark.
Maharaj, you mentioned
Krishna left the gold,
on the other hand, we're also, I don't, maybe I just don't understand the difference between, I don't know the technical difference between Tattva and Rasa. Okay. Maybe my question is actually, so how is it that gopis get that reaction from Krishna and the queens of Dwarka get to practice their own Krishna? I mean, they're serving. They're like practically servants, although they have servants, they choose to do things which the servants do, like and massages and things like that. And Henkap and Sachibama insist that, you know, I have to have the whole tree. So how is it that they can live out their wildest proud dreams like that?
See, Tattva is based on knowledge. So then you are separating by knowledge one thing and another. So then you know who is God, who is servant, what's material world, what's spiritual world, you know, like this. So then you get like Panchatattva, you get Krishna and his energies, the internal, the external, you know, like this. And the jiva. So this way you understand, but there's no interaction at this point. See, knowledge, tattva gyan, or this sambandha gyan, means you understand what is the position, but then how they relate is another thing. Just because you know, here is mother, here is son, so therefore then there's a relationship, son's supposed to be, you know, deal with mother like this, mother takes care like that, and so many things. But that doesn't mean you understand what taste is going on between them. That's something else. That's rasa. Okay, so that's there. Then, is that answer or?
Well,
pardon, okay.
Pardon.
Okay. Then, so therefore in rasa, the queens are it's swakya. So swakya means you only give 50%. You only 50% give yourself. So that means 50% they work for Krishna's satisfaction. Means, well, they're working all for his satisfaction, but 50% they enjoy. Because as the wife, then that's the natural right. It's 50% they enjoy. Like that. But, so the standard is lower. For the queens, for the gopis, it's higher. There it's 100%. So Krishna actually, he only stays in Dwarka because he can't go back to Vrindavan. He went back to Vrindavan. See, the residents of Vrindavan are staying alive because Krishna might come back. But if he comes back, then they'll be so worried he'll leave, that will finish them. So therefore, he wants to go back, but he can't because of their intense, you know, mood of separation and affection. So that's why he stays in Dwarka. Yeah. So that's higher. And then there's so many... is also, you see, is those persons that you're mentioning, then they all accept Rukmini as the main queen. So then everything's in order. But of the gopis, they haven't accepted that Radharani is the main. Krishna wants to dance in the middle with Radharani and everybody else around. But they won't buy that because each one thinks they're the great devotee. They're the guru. Right? That's why these are obstacles, right? And they have to be removed before Prema Bhakti can manifest. Radharani, she's the guru. She's the great devotee, right? So until they accepted that, seeing that her separation and her affection for Krishna was so much greater than theirs, then they accept. Then everything's put in place. Then it can work. Then just within their rasa, they may be more proud or less proud or more submissive or less. That's just to bring out the rasa with Krishna. It's just their service.
Same with the queens and dwarfs. It's just part of the, it's just the way the relationship is. But the problem was there is because of ego, they thought they were the gopi. But no, they're dasana, Radharani is the gopi, and they're all simply assist, they're all they're doing is expanding the pleasure of Radha and Krishna. Like that. So that had to be put into place. That's why on advanced devotional service, see, when one is...
Is that rasa or is that tattva?
Huh?
Is that rasa or is that tattva?
Means that there's a mistake in the both. They just, because they're not perfect. They're perfect enough to be able to go in contact with Krishna, but not enough to enter fully. Like that. So they've crossed. Basically, they've crossed smarandas, but they are stuck at the apandas. They have to get beyond that. These are very, very subtle points. You can get stuck at that point for bhakti. I know Haridas Thakur says, I think he says hundreds of thousands of lifetimes if you are the big devotee. Huh? Yugas, yeah. Long time. Because the point is there is no... Means then, if you're the big devotee, now you're not trying to enjoy... God means you're trying to enjoy the energy. Okay, we've given that up. But now you're trying to enjoy God. You're the big devotee, you're the... Like that. No. It's now his servant. So therefore you have to follow... That's why you have to follow in the footsteps. So... Then if you can't approach the previous acharyas through your acharya, there's no question that you're going to be able to follow Radharani and her shakis, no. And her maidservants. No, it won't work. Vishwanath points that out. He says people that can't follow properly these things, they like to jump over. They're not trusted by these Brajavasis. They don't trust them. That's what I was meaning. They can say they're big devotees, this, that, do so many things, it doesn't matter. The Brajavasis don't trust you. Like that. If you can't do a simple thing like that, then how are you going to do a bigger thing? You know, I'm going to do the topmost. I'm going to follow perfectly in the footsteps of Radharani. But I'm not going to follow in the footsteps of my acharya. No, okay, well, it doesn't work. Won't fly. Can't fly. So, even though it seems that it's just a basic fundamental, oh, that's sadhana bhakti. No, sadhana bhakti is only the manifestation of ragatmika bhakti in a form that the conditioned soul can relate to. There is only ragatmika bhakti. There's nothing else. But because others can't digest it, therefore then it takes on different flavors. And therefore you get Dwarka, you get Vaikuntha, you get all these different things. It's the same principle. Radha and Krishna are Radha and Krishna. But we don't have the love. So why are we at Mangalartik? Oh, we have so much love for Radha and Krishna? No, because we have to be there. Therefore it's Radha and Krishna, but we're there because we have to be there. Therefore we're relating to them as Lakshmi Narayan. They have to relate back to us as Lakshmi Narayan. They want to relate to us as Radha Krishna. We can't digest it. Therefore, Prabhupada says we're worshipping Lakshmi Narayan. Because Radha and Krishna have to take that mood to deal with us how we deal with them. Like that. So there is only Radha and Krishna. There is nothing else. But we don't see like... Sometimes you see, Prabhupada says, oh, this is a particular manifestation of Radharani. He's talking about something of the material world, some aspect of Maya. It's a form of in Calcutta, bombs were dropping, Japanese were bombing, he says it's a form of Krishna. But it is not a very palatable form, but it's Krishna. Like that. So for those Brajavasis, there's nothing that's not Krishna. Like that. For those who aren't yet Brajavasis, then that's Krishna and this is not Krishna. We only hear these pastimes, we don't hear those. Prabhupada talks about that. Strange though, Lalita in her kunj, on the decorating the walls of her kunj, are all the pictures of Krishna killing the demons. Not pictures of Radha and Krishna together, half-dressed and this and that. No, it's just Krishna killing demons. That's what's on her wall in her kunj. So somehow or another, she likes it.
And when they're talking about Krishna, we know you, Krishna. You know, you don't know how to, you behave badly with women. You know, you cut off Suparnika's nose and, you know, you banished Sita to the forest. You did all these things. They don't see any difference. But all of it's seen in connection with Krishna. So all that just reminds them of the rasa with Krishna. That is the nitya siddhis. So it's not that, oh, only these activities will make us, and those activities won't. That's neophyte, this is Govinda. Like that. So this is the how do you say? This is the parampara system. He gets it, gives it to me, I give it to him. So it's like that. So this is the thing, is that one who understands the system doesn't make these distinctions. One can see is that it's all part. It's a matter of understanding the system. Because there's only one system. Krishna says there's only one path. But depending on how much you understand it, that far you get. So that's why we have to approach the acharyas. And they teach us how to perform the activities. Like that. And we must understand that also, there's been no change. That's other. Many will say, oh, they were changed, or Bhaktivinoda Thakur changed things. No. Before, the Goswamis only had to instruct someone who was happy to come and live under a tree. Right? So now, how many people that are like in our movement now could just go out and live under one of these trees for the rest of their life? That's it. I mean, not, okay, we'll go out there for a week or for Kartik or, and then go back and sit in New York. Yeah, you know, I lived under a tree for a minute. It was really great, really austere, you know. But I think, you know, it's really, you know, you should do it for your spiritual advancement, you know. You don't really taste the nectar until you lived under a tree. No, the rest of their life. They're instructing them about the process of Raga Nuga Sadhana. So there's no problem. People that came from families where Garbhodhan Samskar was done, you know, they do know their family generation for seven generations. You know, these people are coming and living under a tree, giving up everything. Right? So there is a bit of kind of a detachment, advancement, and other things. So then from there, okay, then very quickly, then you can teach them. After you decide that, yes, I can train the person. 1 to 3 years, they live under a tree with you, and then you decide, yes, I'll initiate them, and then they can be instructed in these things. You know, they can sit, they can chant 64 rounds, sitting in one place, no problem, they're not restless, right? They can sweep all day and feel that they're doing something important. Not that, unless I do something big, I'm not doing anything important. So all that Bhaktivinoda Thakur did was take it and transform it into how anyone could come, those who can't live under trees, right? How they could take part. So they have to do all the steps that gets them to the point where they're detached enough, they could live under a tree. They don't have to live under a tree, but they could. In their consciousness, physically or this, that, that's another thing. Therefore, there's no change. It's just that since the students are different, therefore you have to explain more basic things that the other person could understand more easily. They grew up hearing Vedic knowledge, practicing Vedic culture and everything. They already have respect from when they were small. They respected their mother, their father, anyone else. Now it's you have to teach people there is such a thing as authority. You know? They've always worked, helped, done something. Now you have to teach people that there's such a thing as work, service. Right? You know, so, I mean, very fundamental things that are on there. But you have to get them to those points. So that it's not a change. The system is the same. It's just that when, you know, it's like they had people who were coming in as, you know, like graduates. So then you can go into advanced things. Now you have people, you know, who aren't, you know, even ready for nursery school. So then you gotta, you know, teach them how to hold the glass and, you know, don't throw the cookies at each other and
you know, stuff like that. Does that make any sense? Is that okay? Okay. So end here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premananda.